I'm recording now.
All right, welcome to Hebrew Club. From the sublime to the, no, ridiculous to the sublime. We're going to finish Psalm 102, and then we're going to go to Psalm 130. And we were actually at verse 23, and kind of in the second movement of the psalm. In the first part, through verse 12, the psalmist had laid out his lament, what some call his complaint, but his describing of his distress. And notice now in this second part, from verses 13 through 23, roughly 10 verses, he exhibits his trust in Yahweh and talking about how, you know, for example, in verse 18, how Yahweh turns to the prayer of the outcast or the destitute one, doesn't despise their prayer, and how he watches from on high to listen to the complaint of the prisoners. Notice you get to verse 21, and verse 22 then, you see, to declare in Zion the name of the Lord and his praise in Jerusalem. So notice how the mood and tone of the psalm has changed as his faith in Yahweh and in his presence and in his power re-exerts itself. Now verse 24, you see a different movement here and a different tone again. In abaderek kohi kitzar yamai. Inna, that is the PL form, perfect, and it means here to afflict or to oppress. Right? And I think that the subject is Yahweh. I mean, he's talking about Yahweh. He has afflicted on the way Kohi. Now notice how the Masoretes want you to pronounce that. Can you guys figure that out? This is a Karei Kativ reading. How, what do they want you to read here with that weird pointing?
Kohi.
Kohi, right, my power. Notice that the text has Koho, the continental text, his power, but that doesn't make any sense. And remember, vavs and yuds are very often interchanged. That's a very common correction. And so almost every translation will go with my power. So he has afflicted in the way my power. He has afflicted my strength, oppressed my strength. Okay, kitzar yami. This is a PL. The call means to be short. So what would the PL mean? Make sure, it becomes a factative. Notice when you have stative verbs, they usually become factative in PL, to make. All right?
So, like
hifil,
like making it.
So, hifil, when you have, if you have a stative verb in the call, in the hifil, they will be usually transitive or sometimes active in transitive, the active transitive, not causative. It's only if you have a verb like he throws the rock in call, then in the hip it will be he caused someone to throw a rock. See, so I mean, to call the hip it causative is kind of a basic get you in the ball game kind of thing, but you have to be careful about trying to force causal on every single verb because it depends on what the meaning of the verb is in the call, especially when you move from stative to kind of active verbs. So a transitive verb in call will be causative in hifil. A stative verb in call will be transitive or sometimes active intransitive in hifil. You'll see that too. So here it'd be kitzar. He has shortened my days. Right. So notice is as if now he has become submerged once again into his despair. Right. Verse 25. Omari li al ta'aleni b'chatzi yamai. Bedor, this is a weird, bedor dorim shenoteka. Okay. Omar, notice that I say, Eli, oh my God. I say, oh my God, Eli. Alright. Al ta'aleni. Do not lift me. This is from the root Allah, hifil. Do not lift me up. Bachatzi yamai. Do not lift me up or take me away in, very woodenly, in half of my days. Notice that chatzi is one of those verbs in which the construct is the same as the absolute form. So what he means is don't take me away in the midst of my life, see, in half of my days. All right? Now, the next phrase. in generation, see Bedor, in generation of generations, are shenoteka, are your years. So your year. So notice that dor, dorim is kind of an expression for eternity. See, in generation after generation, are your years. In other words, Yahweh, you're eternal. You kind of live in eternity. So the plea is, don't cut me off in the midst of my life, my days, short as they are. See, you go on generation after generation. Your years are like that. So he's making a plea that his life be lengthened and not that he be cut off in the prime of life, so to speak. And the first move that he's thinking of is his own short life in comparison to the eternity of Yahweh. All right. So notice that as we go on here, let's see what his plea is based on. What is the basis of his plea here? Okay. Any questions about verse 25? Yeah.
What's the difference between my God and to me? Eli.
It'd be Eli.
Eli, okay.
Right. And that's easy to mix up there. Okay. Any other questions? All right, good. Verse 26 then. Lefanim ha'aretz yasadta u'ma'aseh yadeka shamayim. Lefanim, notice that this is one of those places where you don't have this in constructs, absolute form, and usually translated as an adverb like formerly. Okay, so he's going back in time. The earth you founded, yasadta, you founded the earth, lefanim, long ago, basically. Okay, u'ma'aseh, and the work of your hands is the shamayim, is the heavens. Very nice balanced line there. See, long ago you founded the earth. The work of your hands is the shamayim, is the heavens. So notice he really attributes the creation of the whole universe to him. All right. Verse 27. Hema yovedu ve'ata ta'amod ve'kulam ka'beged yivlu. I'll finish off the verse. Kalavush tachalifem ve'yachalofu. Okay. This is very interesting. Okay, so notice 26. Formerly you founded the earth, and the works and the work of your hands is the heavens. Now notice how the pronoun refers back to them, and it's kind of in an emphatic position. They, yovedu, they will perish. Alright? Va'ata, but you, ta'amod, will stand. See how nice that is with the you don't need the pronouns in either case, really, to make sense grammatically, but they're added there. And notice how the contrast, how he's setting up the contrast. They will perish, but you will stand. So notice that the psalmist is making a very definite separation from between the cosmos, creation, and Yahweh. And you have to remember that against the background of a culture and worldview that's very cosmological, i.e. there's huge connections between the gods and the world. See? And us, so that what we do and how we act, you know, in their thinking has an effect on what God and He does. So you have the fertility cults and the cult prostitution and the whole idea of, if you do something taboo, what happens? Well, that's why things go bad in your life. So against that worldview, notice how the psalmist really assumes a very different kind of world in which Yahweh is the creator and master of the world, in a sense transcendent above it. And the Psalms always kind of work from that understanding. And so I would recommend, if you want to read something really interesting about this, it's Peter Berger's The Sacred Canopy, when he starts talking about the disenchantment of the world. And in Israel kind of makes this move. And you see it reflected in the Psalms all the time. Yahweh is the creator. He's not part of the creation. He created the world. He is in control. And, man takes his place then under that hierarchy. And, that assumption is assumed. And so you see it really much, really in play here. You see, they will perish. You will stand. Amad. All right? Vekulam, and all of them kabeged yivlu, and all of them like a garment will wear out. What's the root of yivlu? Good, balah. Not that common of a word, but again, a call imperfect. And all of them, like a garment, will wear out. Kalavush, like, again, dress, like clothing. See the word lavash there, to put on, to dress. Like clothing, tachalifim. You will cause them to pass away. Notice that you have a hifil from chalaf here, to change, to pass away. You will cause them to pass away. Now notice it follows up with a call form. Vayachalofu, and they will pass. See? So you will cause them to pass away, and they will pass.
Why not cause them to change like you change your clothes?
That's also a possible translation. Yeah, you will maybe transform them, and they will transform. Yeah, that's another possible English gloss.
Sometimes it has a wasa there.
It's a change. Good. Very good. Any other questions through 27? All right. Now notice his final move here. So notice he's making the plea for, hey, don't cut me off, on the basis of, you know, the permanence and eternity of God versus the transience of his creation and his power actually to act. Vatahu. U shenoteka lo yitamu. Now as for, okay, vatahu, look at that. You are, I don't know if you want to translate that, you are it. You are he. You're the one. I mean, look at the strength. It's very interesting. Atahu. You, he. All right, so what the force of that is, I don't know what the best English gloss would be, but again, notice how the Masoretes actually have you divide the line right there. Vatahu, so you actually kind of stop on that. And your years not, yitamu, will not come to an end. What's the root of yitamu?
Tamam,
very good. And this is a call form to be complete or to come to an end. Tamam, it's a call imperfect form. So you are it, you are the one, you are he, and your years will not come to an end. All right?
Yeah.
Yes?
Could the Atahu just be an attempt to somehow mimic Anihu?
That's a good question.
You know, when Yahweh says, I am he.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I don't know, it's a good question. It'd be interesting to see how often this kind of construction occurs. And I usually check stuff like this, and I didn't check it today, just to see how often that... Mm-hmm. That
the psalms use
Ani Hu, Ani Hu.
It's an Isaiah.
Yeah. Oh, the psalms. Yeah. I don't know. I have to check and see for sure. I don't know. I have to get these memorized like my dad. Anyway, verse 20. That's another story. It's led to my scarred self-image. Anyway, verse 29. Benei avadeka yishkonu vezaram lefaneka yikon. The children of your servants. See, this is great. Now notice where he goes here. The children of your servants, yishkonu, they will shakakain. See, they will remain or stay. This is a call imperfect. What's a little unusual about the form of it?
Plain A spelling?
Yeah, notice the plain A spelling. And if you look at the Masoretic note on the side, it occurs... two times, probably in the Psalter, once malay, which is what you have here, and once chaser, lacking the vav. But whenever you see that, we're not used to seeing it, so it can kind of make it hard to parse. But all he's done is added the vav to that vowel indicator, yishkonu. All right, and you know maybe it's because it's in pause as well, but I'm not sure. I'm not going to say that for sure. So anyway, the children of your servants will remain. That Zaram and their seed before you, Yikon. Their seed will be established. That's the Nifal from Kun. And their seed will be established. All right. Now notice what's left out that the reader is begging to supply the answer to the question, well, how long? And the implicit answer is forever. See, that's what I love about the Psalms, because what's unstated is just as important as what's said. So notice, throughout the argument, he's been talking about Yahweh's eternity and the transience. Now he's going, well, what about your people as separate from creation? Notice he has this kind of final affirmation. They will remain. They will be established. And so it's left to the reader to kind of put down the other shoe forever, just like you are forever. See? So the psalm kind of ends on that note of hope for his life and existence due to the power of Yahweh. Right? So it's kind of a great move that he makes right at the end there. Any questions about that psalm? All right. Good. Let's go then to Psalm 130. We have two more to go, and 130 is the next one. A nice, beautiful psalm, a lot of which you will be familiar with. Notice that this is one of the Shir HaMa'alot, the Song of Ascents. Notice that you have this whole group of psalms from 120 through 134 that all have that Shir HaMa'alot as the title. Everybody see that? And it suggests that these were said while God's people were on their way to Jerusalem to celebrate one of the festivals. And some suggest that it was used as they were going up the steps to the temple. Could be any of those. But they're beautiful psalms. And you'll notice and be familiar with this one rather quickly. Okay? So, Shir HaMa'alot, Song of the Ascents, the going ups, the ups. Mima'amakim keratika Yahweh. From the depths. Okay, notice the what's the root from ma'amakim? Amat means to be deep. To be deep. And you also have a word for valley formed with that root. So, from the depths, keratika, I called to you, O Yahweh. Adonai shima bekoli tihyena ozneka kashuvot lekol tachanunai. O Adonai, hear. Notice that that's an imperative with that hey at the end. Hear bekolo, hear my voice. Tihyena ozneka. Let your ears, or may your ears be kashuvot. This means attentive. It's an adjective, feminine plural. The masculine singular form is kashuv, and remember the root, the hekashiv, hifil, to pay attention to. Kashav means to be attendant to. So notice you have an adjective form with the same kind of root letters. May your ears be kashuvot, attentive to the call, to the cry of my tachanunai, to the cry of my pleas for help, pleas for mercy. From kanan, to be gracious to, notice. Tachanun is a noun, this time formed with a tav, with the same meaning. Will.
Is this a real adjective, this kashuv?
Yes.
Or it's not a call passive participle?
Right. Okay. This is an adjective, and it's used maybe, I found it four or five other times.
Okay.
Right. Good. Any other questions through verse 2? All right. Verse 3. Im avonot tishmar yadonai mi ya'amod. If iniquities you tishmar, if you guard, if you keep iniquities, and maybe you can understand, if you keep track of iniquities, O Yah, O Adonai, who will stand? Right, that's a troubling question, right? If you do that, or a troubling condition or possibility. If avonot you keep track of, or keep, O Lord, Adonai, who Ya'amod will stand? And now notice immediately where he goes. This is a great line. 130 verse 4, one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Ki imka hasalicha lema'an tivare. Notice the contrast between 3 and 4. If you keep iniquities, O Lord, who will stand? But with you, hasalicha, the forgiveness. From salach, to forgive, to pardon. But with you, the forgiveness, so that you should be feared. What's the root of tivare? Yeah, yare, to be afraid of. So this is a nifal, imperfect form. All right, so that you should be afraid, and I don't think be afraid is, but fear more in the sense of humble awe, you know, before him. This is the one who has the power to forgive. Right. Notice the contrast between if you do this, no one can stand, obviously. You know, notice the rhetorical question. But with you, there is forgiveness. So notice where his mind goes from contemplating his own sinfulness to Yahweh's grace and forgiveness. And the result of that is tivare. Okay, any questions? I mean, those words are words that merit careful meditation and thought, I would say, as to where the psalmist goes from here.
So Keith and the adversaries.
Yeah, notice what's really driving that. And I'm going to give you a little different understanding here, too. But what's really driving it is the content of the lines,
sure,
and not
sure,
the meaning of key.
Yeah.
I think key could have a more assertive force, like, certainly with you there is forgiveness.
Indeed.
Or indeed with you there is forgiveness. See, especially out of the possible thought that, well, who can forgive those sins? See, he moves to really assert positively, there is surely or certainly forgiveness with you. Verse 5. Kiviti Yahweh kivta nafshi ve'lidvaro hochalti. This is a PL from Kava, to wait or to hope. So, notice, I wait for Yahweh. My soul waits. So notice the two PL, I love this. See, kiviti Yahweh kivta nafshi. I wait for Yahweh. My soul waits, and for devaro, and for His word, or to His word, Hochalti, again a synonym for kava. I put my hope. And this is a hifil form from yachal. Pay attention to this because we'll see a different form in a couple verses. So hifil perfect, yachal, to wait or to hope for, to expect. And again, you see this very much in a relationship parallel with kava. So, you know, I wait or I hope for Yahweh, my soul waits or hopes, and for His davar, I love that, for His davar, I, yachal, I wait, I hope. And notice the word that he expects is this word of the selicha, forgiveness or pardon, and he's going to wait for it. So notice as the reader, you're wondering, well, when's that going to come? See, how does that manifest itself? What does he mean? Will.
I'm just wondering about nefesh. I know Dr. Lessing sometimes likes to translate that life, just in my life. And, you know, how do we understand nefesh more?
Well, nefesh, again, is one of those signifiers that can be used in a huge variety of contexts. So that sometimes it refers to human life. Sometimes nefesh refers to self. It's used reflexively. Sometimes it's used for physical body.
So what would you say is the best?
So, see, I tend to think of it here in more concrete terms as your innermost soul or spirit, that part of you.
Okay.
So, see, I wait for Lord, my nefesh, my kind of inmost being waits. Although, you know, we can debate the propriety of different English glosses for that term even here. Okay, verse 6. Here you have it. Here that is again. Nafshi l'Adonai, mit shomrim laboker, shomrim laboker. Again, my nefesh. I'll leave it untranslated. Let you translate it, Will. My nefesh for Yahweh, for Adonai. My nefesh for the Lord. Okay. Now notice the min is comparative. More than those who watch laboker for the morning. Those who watch for the morning. All right, so his thoughts linger on those. Because notice what you do when you say, when you repeat it again. The first time you see Mishomrim Laboker, you're thinking of, okay, there's guards, you know, there's three watches at night, and the third one is waiting for the morning. When you say it again, it's as if he's asking you, hey, think deeper. See, more than those who watch for the morning, those who watch for the morning. And remember, you have, like Psalm 46, God shall help her at break of day. Remember, you have the Exodus, the people were actually rescued at break of day. And, you know, in the morning, you have, that's when God's mercy comes after that dark night. So it's almost as if, more than those who watch for the morning, watch for the morning. So notice that he's asking you to explore your thoughts a little farther as far as the implications and reference of that term, and think about mourning on different levels, and you see the referent. So again, I think, well, I hate to invoke his name, but I will. Stanley Fish, in his self-effacing, well, he talks about the poetry of the metaphysical poets and all that, and one of the things he says about the Bible, which George Herbert does, is God is all in all, so it's all about eliminating the blurring and eliminating distinctions in things that we always make. So distinctions in time, distinctions in referent. Sometimes the scripture works to undermine those so that finally you see God is all in all. And that's, so for example, our way of reading the Bible typologically is kind of like that. We don't see these as separate contingent events, but as part of a bigger pattern that finally make the picture of Christ, you see. So that we can talk about baptism and Exodus as not two separate events, but in some sense the distinctions overlap, see, for God's people. We can talk about us as being Israel. We can talk about, you know, so that Paul can talk about the fulfillment of the Isaiah passage, the suffering servant, light to the nations as Christ, and in the same sense, hey, we're doing our ministry to fulfill this prophecy. See, so I think that happens a lot in the Psalms as well, and helps us meditate on the Psalms within our understanding of biblical theology and the way we read and understand the Bible, and how history actually, God works through it to work His purposes. So I'll leave you guys with that way too deep thought today.
All right.
Take care, you guys. Have a great break, and we'll see you after break. We'll finish this up and go to the last one.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.